Blog Talk Radio.
Politically direct, and I am the Professor Fernando Uribe. Again, I want to thank you all for joining us here tonight, the 19th of September. My goodness, folks, how the year is flying by. Of course, hopefully everyone's had a great month of September thus far. Everyone may be back to school, back to work, back to the regular routines after the summer. You know, the baseball pennant race is winding down. The NFL is back. Happy to see my Dallas Cowboys off to a 2-0 start, hopefully 3-0. This Sunday against Miami, we'll find out. Unfortunately, not as great for the local fans, whether it be North Jersey for Jets and Giants fans, or even South Jersey for Eagle fans as well. But season is still early. We'll see. We'll find out. But again, it's great to be in September, folks. A little bit of a crisp temperature in the air. And I don't know about you, but I love the fall weather, and I hope you do too. Again, I want to thank you all for listening in from wherever and however you may be doing so throughout the Garden State. And, of course, throughout the good old U.S. of A. Direct the show's inbox at any time, ladies and gentlemen, which is politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Once again, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Also, check out the show on Instagram, @politicallydirectnj. Also, hit me up on Instagram as well, @ProfessorFernandoUribe. Also, if you love Twitter, look me up on Twitter as well, @ProfessorFUribe. And for all you Facebook subscribers, take a moment to please like Politically Direct. Share it on your walls and tell your friends to do the same. Now, I do want to hear from you tonight at some point, ladies and gentlemen, so don't be shy. Call me toll-free, 818-572-8032. Once again, toll-free number tonight, 818-572-8032. Toll-free number tonight brought to you by Insider NJ. Folks, I can't say it enough. For all of your political news and everything you want to know that's going on in the political scene here in the Garden State, look no further, folks. Insider NJ brings it to you every single day. Check it out at www.insidernj.com. Once again, folks, make sure you like them on Facebook and also follow them on Twitter. And once you're on the website, again, www.insidernj.com, up the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the subscribe button. Click on that, and guess what? You're automatically enrolled, free of charge, with the morning intelligence briefing. So when you wake up in the mornings and you're having a cup of coffee, maybe you're walking your dog, maybe you're taking out the trash, recycling, whatever it is you're doing, maybe you're on your smartphone, maybe you're sitting near your Mac or your laptop, or perhaps you have your tablet nearby, it'll be right in your inbox every single morning, folks. So for the hottest scoops and the latest political news, trust me, nobody brings it to you better than Insider NJ. It starts with our editor, Max Pizarro, certainly all of our great columnists, which include Jay Lasseter, the dean of Hudson County Journalism, Al Sullivan, certainly my guest in just a few moments, and many others. Folks, I couldn't ask for better teammates than what I have at Insider NJ. So check them out, www.insidernj.com. insidernj.com. Don't forget to get your politics, folks, night or day, from Insider NJ. Again, 818-572-8032, toll-free number tonight. Again, 818-572-8032. As a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, the opinions and views expressed tonight and every week here on Politically Correct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, specifically the management, the journalists, or the staff. Folks, again, hope you had a wonderful weekend. Again, happy Constitution Day this past Tuesday as we celebrated the 232nd birthday of what I would argue, and I tell my students all the time, since I teach U.S. history courses, it is the greatest legal document in the history of mankind. It is a damn durable one, and it is one that, quite frankly, I think stands the test of time and arguably is the blueprint for the rest of the world when it comes to democracy and the ongoing functionality of a republic, folks. Again, happy Constitution Day this past Tuesday there, so hope you get to enjoy it and acknowledge the greatness of, again, as I will argue, the greatest living document, legal document, excuse me, in the history of mankind. So hope you had a good week. As I alluded to before, folks, 818-572-8032. Again, toll free number tonight. And hopefully if you, again, are a fan, call in. I'd love to hear from you what you have to say. Certainly, you know, what's on your mind about what's going on in the political scene right now in the state of New Jersey. And we'll try to talk about that in just a little bit with our guests. But first and foremost, folks, it kind of got me thinking about the state of journalism and quite honestly how I am just sort of, I think, disgusted really with the state of journalism, more so at the national level. And that's the subject of my first shot. Folks, listen, by day, my occupation is being an educator, teaching at the college level. I love teaching social sciences. But I also take equal pride in being a journalist. Now, listen, some people might consider podcasting and doing what I do on a weekly basis journalism. I mean, you're entitled to your opinion, and that's fine. But I would argue with the advancements in technology we've seen for many years now, especially mobile technology, that this is certainly a new wave of journalism. I think that I'm engaging in. And one of the things that I take a lot of pride in is being accurate, being factual, you know, being correct in the facts that I disseminate, and also what I comment on this program. And you know, at a local level here, where I live in Upton County, I can tell you I'm very blessed to work with and collaborate to some extent with outstanding journalists here in Upton County, whether it be John Hyannis with the Upton County View, for a long time, Al Sullivan working at the Hudson Reporter. Obviously now we reap the benefits of having Al Sullivan now with us at Insider NJ, some of the other journalists at the Jersey Journal here in Upton County, you know, without doubt Michael Sherman, who runs the Real Jersey City, another prominent online news service. And listen, they all do a good job. They work hard to inform residents about what's going on. And I'll sort of transition, you know, sort of upward, and I'll go to the state level. And I would argue that first and foremost, it starts with Insider NJ. Nobody does it better than what we do on a daily basis in terms of giving you the best news and coverage about what's going on in New Jersey politics. And listen, there are certainly other publications around the state that, again, you know, I would argue that do an exceptional job, you know, NorthJersey.com. I would argue NJTV. I mean, they're more of like a, you know, a TV-based type of news service. But, you know, when we're talking about journalism, for example, you know, what we're reading, whether it's online or sort of tangible newspapers, you know, you think of the Asbury Park Press. You think of the Trentonian. To some extent, maybe the Star Ledger, even though I'm not a fan of their editorial page at times. But again, you know, those are news sources that I can say, hey, you know what? They're not doing a disservice to journalism. But when I sort of transition up to the national level, I mean, I think about, like, just longstanding institutions of journalism that I think are now moving so far away from anything that's credible or accurate, and it's sad. And it's really disappointing. And you know, when I think of the word pathetic, the first thing that comes to mind when I talk about what's pathetic in journalism, I think of the New York Times. And that's the only word I can use to describe what's been going on with the New York Times for some time now. And this past week, I don't know what it was. I don't know if it's just maybe it just caught me on the wrong day, or it's just it sort of just rehashed memories from last fall. You know, when I think of how irresponsible and reckless New York Times is, again, look no further again than this past week when we saw the fallout from a botched story by the New York Times concerning U.S. Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. So just to give you a recap, all right, the Times' Robin Pogerman and Kate Kelly, one of the more prominent writers, decided to write a book attacking Kavanaugh, trying to reveal that all the allegations lobbied at the sitting Supreme Court Justice were indeed true last fall. Well, as we've all learned, that's not the case whatsoever. In fact, the book that they're trying to sort of shove down our throats and going on talk shows, they've been on The View this week, they've been on MSNBC, they've been in all these like soft landing type of, you know, shows where, you know, they'll get a little bit of a cushion. They're not going to go on real shows with real hosts that'll ask them like really, you know, thought-provoking questions. Like they won't go on Tucker Carlson or Sean Hannity's show because they don't want to get grilled. They'd rather just sort of get lobbied softballs like they did on The View. And to some extent, I know that Meghan McCain kind of took them to task, but by and large, the rest of the hosts, which are useless, kind of coddled them. I mean, we saw that the same thing on MSNBC with Rachel Maddow and Lawrence O'Donnell. But folks, the book that they're trying to shove down our throat is pretty much worthless. But they did supposedly have some sort of bombshell about a new accuser who alleged that Kavanaugh shoved his private parts in front of her, like Deborah Ramirez alleged during a college frat party at Yale University. Now, Ramirez's story, as we all know, was part of the democratically controlled media complex's coordinated political hit against Kavanaugh during his confirmation process last fall. Yet, there's a problem. And this supposed new accuser doesn't remember this ever happening. So, of course, what else is new? This is pure fiction. Now, the Times added that portion made a note and totally changed the entire story. So, Pogerman and Kelly blamed the editors. But, of course, they went on to attack the left's favorite target in this country. Yes, we all know, it's Fox News. Now, the Times did not, in fact, quote, correct anything. Because according to them, to make a correction to a story indicates that something was factually wrong. And the newspaper did not acknowledge anything of the sort. What else is new with the New York Times? Instead, the Times story, based on the forthcoming book written by Paul Gribben and Kelly, are writing about the Kavanaugh allegations. And it was updated to say that friends of the student who may have been assaulted say she does not remember the alleged incident. So here's sort of the relevant passage from the Times piece this week that's been debunked, with the clause that was added in the second version. Quote, "We also uncovered a previously unreported story about Mr. Kavanaugh in his freshman year that echoes Ms. Ramirez's allegation. A classmate by the name of Max Steer saw Mr. Kavanaugh with his pants down at a different drunken dorm party where friends pushed his penis into the hand of a female student. Mr. Steer, who runs a nonprofit organization in Washington, D.C., notified senators and the FBI about this account last year. But apparently, according to the New York Times, the FBI did not investigate, and Mr. Steer had declined to discuss it publicly. Now, the Times also corroborated the story with two officials who have communicated with Mr. Steer, as well as the female student who declined to be interviewed, and friends say she doesn't even recall the episode. So, to be clear, the change is a significant one. So, folks, if the student doesn't recall the episode, the accusation that Kavanaugh and others may have assaulted her is arguably weaker than if she did. But contrary to what, you know, Fox News or have people believe, according to the New York Times, the change in the Times story does not prove that the alleged incident didn't happen. Yeah, well, you know what? And I say this to the New York Times and to the editor or everyone in upper management. Yeah, it is a significant change because it renders the entire story worthless. We all know, ladies and gentlemen, that Ramirez, Christine Blasey Ford, and even Julie Swetnick, the latter of which was dismissed outright for being just totally outrageous. Okay? We all know all of their stories were fabricated and factually untrue. And of course, you know, we know that she pretty much recanted the entire allegation because it was trash, and that's what it was. Ford and Ramirez have zero corroborating witnesses. Even Leland Tizer, the star witness for Ford, now says she was bullied into revising her remarks because they didn't sufficiently back up the former's account that Kavanaugh had raped her in high school. She also says that Ford's account made no sense. She wasn't the only one who thought that. Anyone with cognitive function knew that Ford's account was very sloppy. If you don't remember it, go on YouTube. Christine Blasey Ford's testimony was embarrassing, to say the very least. And then this is not me attacking, and I'm not trying to minimize the impact of sexual assault, folks, but I think it's very clear Christine Blasey Ford was not sexually assaulted. Okay? But this is a bigger issue here now, okay? This isn't about Fox News. It's about the Times trying to get the Kavanaugh impeachment circus going, and as a result, totally failing in the process. Listen, let's be very honest. To sort of use a football analogy, this Hail Mary by the New York Times failed miserably. Now, the reality is Kavanaugh's still on the Supreme Court and Trump is still president. Now, again, if this was serious about a correction and an editor's note, then this is a distinction without a difference. And the reason why the new information was added was over the fact that this was a mistake. Now, the new accuser doesn't remember. Like, how can you omit that from the story? So whether the writers had included it already in the original copy remains to be seen. But folks, I've said it before, and I'll say it again. When it comes to mainstream media, I don't trust liberals whatsoever or their media allies. So when you forget to include something and then add it, isn't that also sort of a correction? And by the way, this is not Fox News is doing, all right? This is the New York Times being reckless. So, ladies and gentlemen, again, don't get mad at me when I'm pointing out your bad behavior. And this is directed at the New York Times. It's not Fox News' fault that you took a serious L in trying to take down a superbly qualified Supreme Court justice. People should know when they've lost, folks. And especially for the left in this country, they have yet to learn this valuable lesson. I mean, let's be very honest, ladies and gentlemen. Only hardcore committed leftists can actually consider the New York Times to be anywhere of a credible source in 2019. I mean, there no longer exists an objective and credible search for the truth of the New York Times. Only an agenda dedicated to smearing a duly elected president, in addition to this fixation that the New York Times has with wanting to sort of tar and feather his supporters as sort of ignorant and irredeemable racists. Not all of them are. We know that. But folks, when the president or anyone else talks about fake news, look no further than the New York Times. Let's be honest. How can anyone come to a different conclusion? I don't think you can. And that's my first shot here on Politically Direct. Folks, 915 here on the East Coast again, 818-572-8032. Toll free number tonight. We should call in. Take the calls later. We have a great guest coming up right now. Ladies and gentlemen, joining me right now is my fellow insider NJ teammate, an exceptional journalist in his own right, my good friend and yours, folks, the great Fritz Snowflack, joins us on Politically Direct. Fred, what's going on, brother?
Well, thank you very much for the compliments. I don't know if I'm great, but thank you for saying that.
Well, listen, Fred, I speak truth here. That's what makes this show so redeemable statewide. I just speak truth every week, brother. So it's good to have you on.
It's good to talk to someone from Union City.
Oh, absolutely. Listen, you know, I'm proud of where I'm from. I grew up in West New York, living in the city. It's my hood, man. You know, I'm proud to be from it. The Blog Talk Radio studios are here. So I'm always proud to shout out Union City
I saw you on Burnline Avenue a few months ago.
Yes. I remember seeing you walk by as you were doing a story. I was like, oh, my God, Fred's in my hood. Holy cow. Unbelievable. I mean, like, this is great. So, Fred, it's great to have you on tonight. A lot to get to. But I wanted to start off with a column you published this week and really caught my eye. I want to get your thoughts on it. I know you posted an article, a column this week, concerning Gene Weber and certainly his attempt at a political rebirth. And you know what, Fred, you know, last fall, you know, Jay was facing sort of a really tough battle. I mean, I think we saw that collectively in New Jersey, there was this sort of political climate that was looking to unseat Republicans from any congressional seat. Obviously, Democrats literally swept the entire state, all but one congressional district down in South Jersey. And one of the casualties in this was Jay Weber. You know, he's a longstanding assemblyman. Certainly, he fought a tough campaign against Mikey Sherrill. But as we all know, you know, last year, Democrats, to no one's surprise, overtook the House. But, you know, let's be honest, Fred, if you're a student of history like I am, that tends to happen during the first midterm election of any sitting president. There's only been two occasions where it didn't happen, with George W. Bush in 2002 and President Franklin Roosevelt, I believe, in 1936. So the idea that the opposing party takes over the House during the midterms is not a surprise. But it was a surprise in that district because it's always been solidly Republican, and Jay Weber lost pretty solidly to Mikey Sherrill. And now, a year later, obviously, I think he's trying to sort of resurrect himself politically. What caught your eye about Jay Weber this year?
Well, first of all, I don't know. You know, sometimes headlines tend to exaggerate a bit, as we both know. But I don't know if it's resurrect himself. I mean, it just maybe you could say he's trying to launch a kind of a comeback, so to speak. This county has always been very Republican, very conservative, and Jay not only lost, he lost rather substantially. And the key thing is that, you know, the district 11, it also includes Essex, parts of Essex and parts of Passaic County, parts of more Democratic places, but he actually lost in Morris County as well. And that was a big surprise. And as you said, I think now the Dems are going after Jay again. This year it's a completely different thing because, you know, the state assembly is at the top of the ballot. And the question is, how many people care about the state assembly? I mean, I'm being facetious to a certain extent, but not totally. And
sure.
I don't know if there'll be as many people voting. And I think that tends to be in Jay's favor.
Agree, Fred. And Fred, by the way, you sound a little muffled at times. I don't know if you have the phone by you, Hello?
Is this better?
Yeah, it's better now. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it just sounded a little muffled before. I'm sorry, Fred. I'm not trying to be difficult with you, brother. I'm sorry. I just noticed the sound. I want to make sure our audience gets the full context of what we're talking about tonight. Listen, Fred, you hit the nail on the head. And one of the things that's a concern for me, I think, as someone who watches elections closely, is what turnout's going to be like in these assembly races coming up. Again, all 80 assembly seats are up for grabs this November. As we know, Speaker Coughlin has been very cautious, I think, with a lot of Democrats in sort of, you know, vulnerable districts, right? And it doesn't seem like Jay's district is one where I think he might be in risk of losing, but it seems that, you know, I give him credit. I think Jay Weber took that shot at the chin last November, and I think he learned from it. I think he also kind of understands that, New Jersey's a very challenging state, man. It really is. And sometimes, you know, we know that it's been solidly blue going back to, I think, right around the time of President George H.W. Bush, right? I mean, I don't think New Jersey's voted for, you know, has selected a Republican in the electoral vote since 88. So obviously it's been solidly red. Yes, we've had Republican governors since then, from Christine Todd Whitman to Chris Christie. But at the end of the day, Fred, obviously the legislature has been solidly blue since 2001, I believe, where Democrats have held solid majorities in both chambers of the legislature. And only now recently, you know, Phil Murphy won election in 2017. So clearly the state is under Democratic rule. But do you think that whether it's Jay in his district or other districts, do you think that Republicans have any chance of maybe sneaking a seat or two this November and trying to maybe chip away at that majority that Democrats have in the assembly?
I don't know if they have a chance, but if they ask me, and if they never, I don't think they will, I think their strategy should be a kind of what you just said, is that, hey, Democrats control the entire state. That's point number one. And point number two is one-party rule is just not good. I mean, you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm listening to you. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, I mean,
you're absolutely right about that.
I mean, from an objective point of view, it doesn't make any difference if it's liberal rule or conservative rule. It's just not very good because then, you know, it's in a way you see it's happening now. Because in Trenton, the Democrats are fighting among themselves. And I don't know how many people are following it, but they're certainly fighting among themselves. And I don't think that's good for the state. And, you know, you always need a viable opposition. And I think in that column I said, I had a Republican tell me last night, he was speaking anonymously, I mean off the record, so I couldn't use the name, but he said, Republicans are almost extinct in New Jersey. Now, that's an exaggeration, but still, you know what he's talking about. I mean, they really don't.
Sure.
But, I mean, that's not good. I know maybe if you're ultra-liberal, you'll say, good, they should be extinct. But from a more broad-minded point of view, from good government point of view, you need to have two parties. And, I mean, you need to have some sort of opposition. So I think that should be the Republicans' argument. I mean, hey, look, Democrats control everything. You need an opposing voice. And I think I don't know if that would be successful or not, but I think that's a good argument to make.
Listen, Fred, you make sense with that, and I'm with you, man. Listen, as someone that teaches history and teaches social science and political science, I tell my students all the time, balance in government is what the founders wanted, right from the onset, right from the formation of our
Absolutely.
Republic. And I mentioned this during my opening monologue. This past Tuesday, we celebrated the 232nd birthday of our Constitution. Again, I would argue it is still to this day the most glorious and durable legal document in the history of mankind. And I'm not trying to sound like I'm engaging in hyperbole, Fred, but I mean, it's the truth. And I tell this to my students all the time. It's a damn durable document, but also the framers were very insistent on the fact of having balance. It's why they insisted on checks and balances at the federal level, right, between the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial branch. And it sort of filters its way down to the states where, you know, obviously, you know, the federal government insists on federalism. They want to make sure that states' rights are preserved. And this is where it's tricky because now we're sort of relying on states to be able to govern themselves. And I'll just use New Jersey, Fred. I don't know about you. I'm a homeowner. I'm a taxpayer. And this is not me sounding partisan here, but you hit the nail on the head. This idea of a one-party rule has been doing us a disservice forever now, okay? Let's be very fair. What we've seen in New Jersey is property taxes continue to escalate. We're seeing perhaps another gas tax increase on the horizon. We're seeing a mentality in Trenton seems to be sort of favoring illegals more than taxpayers and American citizens. And this is, listen, and for the record, folks, if you're tuning in tonight, listen, this is not racist on my part. This is not bigoted. This is not like being xenophobic. It's being truthful that, you know, New Jersey and what's going on in Trenton with the one-party rule, as you mentioned, there's infighting. There, you know, the governor and the state senate president, arguably the two most powerful people in New Jersey, can't see eye to eye on anything. We saw it leading up to the state budget. We see it in other policy. And guess what? Who suffers? We do. You and I, homeowners, taxpayers. And to be honest with you, I don't know if – and, you know, I had New Jersey GOP chairman Doug Steinhardt on the show a few months ago. And, you know, he said to me, you know what, Fernando, I really want to try to convey this point to people in New Jersey leading up to November that some assembly districts are competitive because we need to remind people that we need balance. So when I hear you say that, Fred, it's just – it reminds me that – for whatever reason, people seem to be oblivious because they're reelecting the same people to Trenton. And I don't know about you, man. It's infuriating.
I know. I agree with you. You know, a lot of time people blame politicians, and politicians get blamed a lot for a lot of things. But you know, just about all incumbents get reelected. And the problem is that the problem, unfortunately, is with the people. People could vote, but a lot of people just don't vote. I mean, what do you think the turnout is going to be? 30% in November this year?
Ooh, that's high. That's high.
Yeah, but that's
high.
My point. It sounds high, but mm-hmm. it's also ridiculously low, 30%. And that's the problem. And that's like, you know, if the average guy doesn't vote, all the people who do vote, and I'm not being demeaning, they're not bad people, but people who do vote, are people who are tied to the political system, and they're going to vote. I mean, they have a right to vote, but that's why the incumbents keep on getting reelected. And you know, it's not a partisan thing. Of course, in a lot of places, like the suburban Republicans get elected all the time, even on the local level. So that's just
No, you're right about that. And I think also it's interesting you brought up that number because I think in 2017. If I remember correctly, I think turnout was like, what, 38%, I think, right? 39%, I think. I don't think it's correct.
And that was almost a governor.
Yeah, exactly.
That was a governor.
Yeah. And it's really sort of, I don't know if the right word is disgusting or demoralizing or just really, really ridiculous that it seems like, you know, whether you see it on social media, Fred, or you see it, you know, with people you talk to for your columns, you know, when you would talk to people on the street. It just seems like, you know, at the moment, people seem very energized and angry and upset and furious about the lack of functionality in government. But as you mentioned, turnout when they need to vote is low. And I think that's just a slap in the face of the process. And again, you know, listen, kudos to Jerry Weber. Trying to, you know, keep his name relevant. Now, again, we're going to find out how he does November 5th. We're going to find out exactly if he keeps his assembly seat and should he keep it. I think, you know, you might have to make the case that he might kind of start, you know, maybe get his name out there. I know that some people have said that had he won the congressional seat last year, that that could be a springboard maybe for 2021 as a potential Republican challenger to Phil Murphy. That didn't happen. Clearly, as you mentioned, he lost pretty substantially to Mikey Sherrill. And now, again, he's trying to – and he mentioned, he's a nice guy, wonderful father, great family man, and, you know, obviously a good public servant. But, you know, obviously, you know, Jay needs a good turnout this November, because if the rumors still exist that, hey, Jay would make a good challenger to Phil Murphy in 2021 – well, he kind of has to get the vote out this November 5th. And if he has a really good turnout and a good win, I think he kind of may have to put Jay's name back up there, because as we all know right now, you know, we know Jack Cittorelli, obviously, he's been out and about. You clearly, you know, while he hasn't announced officially, and I know on this program, I had him on right before the start of the summer, and he didn't, you know, by ELEC laws, he couldn't really formally announce on my show, but you kind of get the sense he is at some point. There's rumors of Doug Steinhardt, the chairman of the Republican Party, also maybe taking a stab at this in 2021. You kind of have to believe Jay Weber might, you know, if he wins in November by a big margin, that might kind of give him a little more collateral again. What do you think about that?
No, I think what you're saying is true. I think he'd probably be a better candidate than some of the other people. And, yeah, I think he would be a good candidate. But you said the problem is obvious. He has to win. He has to win by a lot,
yes,
too.
Yeah, I mean, definitely needs that margin in November to sort of solidify him again as a legitimate contender on the state level, where his name is going to sort of regenerate that credibility that he needs moving into 2021.
He might be a little bit too ideologically right-wing to run statewide. I think he might be.
That's fair. But you know what? So was Chris Christie. I think at the time, if you remember in 2009.
Yeah, but then remember, let's go back. When Chris ran in 2009, he led in the primary against Steve Lonergan. Remember him?
Mm-hmm.
How could you forget?
Yeah.
So Steve Lonergan really was the more conservative candidate. And Chris was more.
True.
The real right wing, if you will, the more ideologically conservative Republicans probably went with Lonergan. And when Chris ran, I don't think he kind of tried to run in the middle. Well, granted, he was running against John Corzine, and John Corzine was not very popular. So, I mean,
Corzine was awful. That's what I mean.
Of course, it was a close election because New Jersey is such a Democratic state. But I mean,
sure.
But then, of course,
sure.
Chris, he ran for re-election. That was the height of his career, right? Because he had done a good job and was right after Sandy. He had done such a great job at Sandy, and that's why he got 60% of the vote. So it wasn't even a contest.
No, you're right about that. I think, you know, going back 10 years ago, 2009, I mean, listen, it was, as you mentioned, it was a close election because New Jersey is so suddenly Democratic. But you kind of had an idea that he could beat Johnny Dollars. That was my name for John Corzine. I used to call him Johnny Dollars because that's all he was pretty much about. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, sort of the bad legacy that John Corzine left us. But, you know, looking back on it, you know, you're right. Christie did try to run in the middle. I think he understood he had to. He couldn't go too far right wing. And you're right. I think that maybe Jay Weber kind of faces that same obstacle where, comparatively speaking to Jack Cittorelli, who tends to be sort of a more moderate Republican, and maybe not so much Doug Steinhardt. I think Doug Steinhardt maybe is conservative on economic issues, which I think you need to be in New Jersey because of the fiscal mess we're living in. But I think maybe Doug maybe kind of leans a little bit in the middle for social issues. I think Jay is completely to the right for everything, and that might not sell well statewide. Again, it sells well in Morris County.
He didn't sell well in the congressional race.
Yes, that's right. And again, I think in fairness, you know, we'll find out this November. I mean, obviously, his assembly district is very different than the congressional district that he ran in last November against Mikey Sherrill. As you mentioned, it wasn't just Morris County, parts of Morris County. It was also municipalities and Essex and Passaic counties, which are solidly Democratic. So
I don't think Jay has that disadvantage facing him now in November. I think because he's running in that assembly district in Morris County that seems to be sort of reliably Republican. We'll find out. We'll find out where Jay stands on the morning of on November 6th, because if he has a razor sharp, you know, thin type of victory on November 5th, you know, again, he'll be happy. He gets to serve another term in the legislature, but he might not be that candidate for governor, I think, that the Republicans are looking for. So we'll find out what happens, obviously, in the months ahead. Freddie, you know, another great column this week, you know, and again, I'm plugging all of your columns here tonight. So I certainly, you know, I love your writing. I'm really a fan of your brand of journalism and the way you sort of convey columns. And, you know, they're very easy to read and they're very fluid. So I appreciate that. And folks, again, if you haven't had a chance, check it out at www.insidernj.com. You know, Fred's columns are there and they're so well written. Believe me, you'll learn something every single time you read his columns. But this week also, Fred, you wrote about the political implications in the aftermath of State Senator Bucco's death. Tell us, you know, for our listeners tonight that maybe aren't aware of what's going on in Morris County in that district, tell us a little bit more about sort of like the infighting that's going on.
Okay. I mean, the first thing I started the column, this is the type of thing you almost feel guilty about writing this. I mean, a fella passes away, and then you're writing about what happens next. But I think I start off by calling that for good or for bad, politics always never stops. It always continues.
Yes, that's right.
And you know, as tacky as it seems, and I think it does seem tacky, in politics, if somebody dies, there's always people thinking, and they may be thinking privately, hey, maybe I can replace that person. That's just reality. And that's what happens, and in a way it has to happen. And what happens? I mean, at the moment, the Senator Bucco will be replaced at a convention of the county Republican committee up there in the 25th district. The 25th district is basically central and western Morris County. Some of the towns people may be familiar with: Morristown, Randolph, Roxbury, Dover, Rockaway, Roxbury, they're in the Chester's, they're in the 25th district. And the political dilemma is that one man who wants to replace Tony Bucco in the Senate is his son, Anthony. Now, technically, they'll call him, for the sake of discussion, Tony Jr., even though he's technically not a junior, but it'll make it easier for discussing things. Like, Tony Jr., of course, would like to move up and be the senator. And the problem is he's in the state assembly, and he's running for re-election as an assemblyman right now. So if he is picked to move on to the Senate, he'll have to give up his assembly seat. And that means the Republicans probably will have to replace him on the ballot. And they'll have to do that like with two weeks to go before the election. And that's very complicated. Not complicated. That could be a real mess. And that's the difficulty here. And at the moment, when I talk to the Republican committee, they don't know what they're going to do. I think they know what they're going to do, but they don't want to say it until the senator's funeral. Now, but the funeral is for Senator Bucco is tomorrow. So presumably after tomorrow they announce what they're going to do.
I mean, listen, and I'm glad that you broke this down for us tonight because, you know, again, as you alluded to, I love the onset of your article. For good or bad, politics never stops. And no matter what happens, the system moves on even when there's a death. And, Fred, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's almost like you got a curveball and you hit it out of the ballpark with that. And you're absolutely right. And I think that, listen, like anything else within politics, whether it's in New Jersey or anything else, I think what we're seeing is this sort of disarray that's permeating in our political climate, not just nationally. And I'll get to your thoughts about the national climate in a little while because I'm curious about what your thoughts are. But, you know, I'm also looking at the fact that here in New Jersey, I mean, yes, that's sort of the ongoing theme about what politics is. It's sort of like, it's almost like sports, right? It's almost like the next man up.
or an ex-woman up. It's like, hey, you know, if someone goes down, you got to step up to the plate. And I think that's sort of what happens in politics. And I think New Jersey is no different than any the other 49 states in the country. Having said that, what are your sources tell you, if you can expand upon that, what's going to be sort of like the strategy moving forward in that district as a result of Senator Buco's death?
That's a good question. Nobody knows, because if you don't know who the Republican candidate is going to be, if there's going to be a new Republican candidate, and then again, you don't know from the Democratic side. Now, 2 years ago in this district, the Democratic candidates came within about 2,000 votes of winning, and that's pretty good. I mean, quote unquote, because I mean they got this. This district 25 is a little bit more competitive than, say, Jay Weber's district, which is 26, which is right next to it. So, and the Democrats, of course, they're spending a lot of money and they're running a good campaign, but their campaign is geared to run against, you know, you can't do it anymore, but I mean, part of their campaign was their point could be, look, there are three state legislators from this district. And two of them, Tony Buco Sr. and Tony Buco Jr., come from the same family. And that's maybe a legitimate point of view. I mean, hey, one family shouldn't control two seats. But now, obviously, for obvious reasons, you can't make that argument anymore because the poor fella passed away. So, I mean, that kind of undercuts one of their political arguments. Now, that's why it's unknown what's going to happen. I don't know if Tony Buco is no longer... if he drops out of the assembly race, and they can't use that train of thought at all. So, I mean, it's really interesting from a political, inside political point of view, what they're going to do, what's going to happen.
Listen, you're absolutely right. Fred, you're absolutely right. And I think, and folks, if you're just joining us right now, it is 9:40 here on the East Coast here on Blog Talk Radio. It's my pleasure to have on the show tonight one of my outstanding teammates with Insider NJ, accredited journalist and noteworthy columnist, Fred Snowflake, here tonight, joining us on Politically Direct. Fred, again, you're kind of like going in and out. You're muffled a little bit, so just make sure that, you know, you have the phone close to you so we can all hear you clearly,
okay.
Brother. Please, I appreciate it. Yeah, please, I appreciate it. You know, moving statewide, Fred, obviously, as you alluded to, the assembly races are the top of the ticket this November. Notwithstanding, you know, certainly local races, for example, up here in Hudson County, we have very interesting city council races in Hoboken. We have mayoral races in other towns. We have freeholder elections in certain counties. We have county executive elections up here in Hudson County, for example. But as you said, at the top of the ticket, it's the assembly races. And while, you know, here in Hudson County, the three legislative districts, the 31st, the 32nd, and the 33rd collectively aren't competitive, so we're not going to be seeing any sort of like any upset whatsoever. It's not the case in some parts of Bergen County, some parts in the South, some parts in Central Jersey, but it all sort of relegates, I think, and maybe it's a different mentality because it's, as you said, it's an assembly race. Turnout may not be very high. Clearly, it was different at the federal level last year, where during the midterm elections, yes, turnout was very high in congressional districts all around the country, and so were, you know, Senate races as well. So obviously that doesn't translate to states, you know, during legislative races. So, but don't you think to some extent that maybe this November during these legislative races, and you want to call it a midterm election for Governor Murphy, fine, call it that. But do you think that this might also be sort of an indictment or perhaps a reflection of Governor Murphy, whether people are going to be engaged or not? Because let's be honest, I saw a Monmouth University poll the other day. I think it had the governor at 38% approval. I want to be honest with you, that's very high. I don't know who they polled. I don't know if they polled his kids, family members, cousins, staff. I don't know who they polled, because I can't imagine that number being that high. But that's me. I'm a little biased because I'm upset about how the state's being run. Having said that, do you think that these assembly races could be sort of a reflection of Governor Murphy?
Well, absolutely, but I don't know if it's – actually, 38 is pretty low, but I know what you're saying. I think that poll also said a lot of people didn't have an opinion, which is a problem. people not having an opinion on the governor. But, yeah, obviously, I mean, the people who vote, I could see people who vote who say if they don't like what the governor is doing, they'll vote Republican. But the problem is sometimes the districts are so gerrymandered, it may not make that much of a difference. Like, in Hudson County, probably a lot of people have to be annoyed at Governor Murphy to put a Republican in office. You know, it's just not going to happen. That's
sure.
Sort of the bottom line. Yeah.
Well, again, I mean, I don't know. And listen, as I mentioned earlier in the program, this is a point I drove home with GOP chairman here in New Jersey, Doug Steinhardt. I think it kind of falls on him. I mean, listen, whether or not it's an unfair expectation by me or anybody else in the state, Fred, I think that there's some pressure on Chairman Steinhardt, I think, to really mobilize people in some of these competitive districts. Listen, up here in Hudson County, that's not going to be an issue. You know, Democrats up here, not a Republican, you know, on a registration level, almost like 3-1 up here. So, you know, obviously these districts up here are not competitive. But there are a lot of assembly races right now that are competitive. Are there any ones that really stand out for you right now that you would say, hey, Fernando, don't be surprised if this district flips because of so-and-so? Any districts or any races that catch your eye right now?
Well, we did discuss 25, and I wouldn't be surprised if the Democrats win there, but that's the opposite of what you're trying to suggest. So you're basically suggesting districts in which Democrats lose seats to Republicans, and I don't know if they're going to – I don't know how many districts are out there. I don't know. You know, I think Donald Trump has not done the Republican brand much good in New Jersey. I think that's a problem for Republicans. I mean, it could be different elsewhere in the country, but I don't know what Trump's popularity is in New Jersey. It's not very good, and I think that's a continuing problem.
You know what? You're right about that, and I think it's true, for example, last November where – you know, obviously all but one congressional district, you know, went blue. Obviously, you know, the one district down the shore remained red, but obviously down south with Andy Kim, all the way up here to Matthew Sherrill and everywhere in between. I think that, for example,
yeah,
New Jersey.
Some Republicans have told me, they say, well, they think the anti-Trump hysteria, if you will, is gone, or at least it may come back in 2020 when we have a presidential election. But that they think a lot of the people who might have voted Democratic last year to send the message, so to speak, they may not be bothered. They may not vote in the assembly election, or if they're marginally Republican or conservative, they may just vote Republican or conservative as they normally do. Because in reality, I mean, last year's election had to do with Congress, so that, of course, had to do with Donald Trump. But this year's election doesn't have to do with Mr. Trump. So, I don't know if that's true enough, but the theory seems to make sense. That's what Jay Weber was saying to me the other night, too. So this theory seems to make sense.
No, you're right about that, Fred. And I think that also there is a difference. I think fundamentally here, you know, in 2019, you know, Donald Trump isn't on the ballot. Again, maybe, you know, State Democratic Chairman John Curry, which we'll get to in a moment because I'm kind of curious about what your thoughts about him are coming up right now with the State Democratic Convention taking place this week coming up in Atlantic City. But it seems like obviously the strategy of sort of invoking the president's name worked in 2018 in congressional races, but statewide here in New Jersey, despite the fact that the president isn't very popular in New Jersey, I think from most recent polls, you know, it hasn't stopped, I think, Republicans from either still invoking his name or invoking the fact that, you know, and I talked about this on my program, not just here on Politically Direct, but I also talk about it in my local program in Hudson County on Wednesday nights. But it just seems that I think a lot of New Jerseyans, listen, last November, I think a lot of districts flipped for the reasons we've discussed tonight. But I think that there's a certain element of New Jersey spread that I think are pretty middle of the road, you know. They may not be a fan of the president, and whether or not they identify as Republicans or conservatives, you know, that can vary. But there just seems to be, I think, a portion of the population in Jersey that I think is getting a little fed up with how crazy a certain wing of the Democratic Party is becoming.
you know, there are a lot of moderate Democrats, right, and we see it in the legislature all the time, whether it's State Senate President Sweeney to other Democrats, you know, statewide in the State Senate or in the State Assembly. There are a lot of moderate Democrats in New Jersey. Yes, they'll be liberal at the end of the day, but they can probably sort of, you know, tread water somewhere in the center if they need to. Maybe for all New Jerseyans, I think the idea, but I think the idea of a crazy radical dynamic of the left swallowing the Democratic Party, I think is very real. And I think that's something that could come back to hurt Democrats, not just maybe this year, but in 2020 as well, because I think middle-of-the-road people are saying, listen, there are people on the other side, not everybody, but there are some people on the other side that are just out of their minds. And I think that might hurt them next year. What do you think?
No, I think you're right. You've seen it with all the new Democratic congressmen and women, like Mikey and Tom Malinowski and Andy Kim in South Jersey. I've gone to some of the town hall meetings. You know, Congress has their recess in August. I love the term recess, like little kids running around the schoolyard. But anyway, so they had their recess. And, yeah, and a lot of the town halls, I mean, some of them are really being pushed hard on things like Medicare for all and impeaching the president. I mean, for basically those are the two main things. And I think those are probably, you could argue, I mean, generally speaking, you could, I mean, I don't need to get into all the shades of difference, but those are left-wing positions. And like most of the congressmen, Mikey Sherrill and Tony Lewandowski, they basically are not in favor of Medicare for all. I mean, basically, this is the Medicare for all in which private insurance would be eliminated. And I think that's bad policy and bad politics, but they're not in favor of that. And also, most of the view is on impeachment is that, well, you know, the House could impeach the president, but it's not going anywhere in the Senate, so why bother? I think those are reasonable positions. But, yeah, they're still being pushed by the left wing. So you're right. I think that could turn off some moderates. We know this, that in every election, probably 40% will vote Republican and 40% will vote Democratic, and you fight for the 20% of the people in the middle. And that's right. That's where you win the game, between the 40-yard line, so to speak. And that's a danger for the Dems, because you know, already we see, like, and of course, you know, like years ago, not too long ago, when the Tea Party, the Tea Party, which is kind of right wing, caused some mischief for more than for like mainstream Republicans. And now we see the same thing happening, I think, with quote unquote mainstream Democrats. Like Congressman Josh Gottheimer. Up in Bergen County, he has a challenger from the left in the primary. I mean, the challenger probably won't be successful, but you know, a primary challenger is not good because it's a pain in the neck, and you got to raise money, you got to campaign. But that's the reality tonight.
No, you're right about that, and I think that sort of moving forward, it might be something that could be problematic, you know, for Democrats again moving forward in 2019 and certainly in 2020. Fred, you know, one of the things, and folks, if you're just joining us right now, it's 9:50 here on the East Coast on Blog Talk Radio. It's my pleasure to have on the program tonight my fellow teammate and an exceptional insider NJ journalist, Fred Snowflack, here tonight on Politically Direct here on Blog Talk Radio. Again, live, folks, 818-572-8032. I'll take some calls later in the show in terms of what you think about tonight's broadcast with my teammate here, Fred Snowflack. Fred, you know, part of my job during the day as an educator is grading. And while it's maybe not my favorite part of the job, obviously it's laborious and very time-consuming, it's a necessary one. And one thing I like to do when I'm hosting this program, especially when I'm talking about politics, talking about our elected leaders here in New Jersey, is grading them. You know, we're approaching sort of the midway point in Phil Murphy's term. Obviously, it's been very tumultuous. He avoided a state shutdown this year. Certainly, there was a threat of it based on the disharmony that exists between himself and Assembly Speaker Craig Coughlin and State Senate President Steve Sweeney. I think it's been well documented, whether, you know, how long it took them to get the minimum wage
law passed. The failure of legalizing marijuana, for example, where the governor was very optimistic that he'd be able to legalize it recreationally, he'd have votes, and subsequently getting that revenue would help the state. That fell through in March. Keith Sweeney went on to say that it wouldn't be even explored until November 2020, perhaps in a ballot measure. I think that's a mistake. I think it should have been on a ballot measure this November. I get it. There's a low turnout, very possible this November with Assembly being at the top of the ticket. I get it. It's an issue that maybe is too important to leave to low turnout. But it just seems like Governor Murphy has been at odds with major leaders in his party. And as he approaches the midway point of his term, obviously, there's a lot to talk about what he's been doing, what he should be doing. You know, there's talk about giving, you know, he's in favor of giving driver's licenses to illegals. He's in favor, obviously, of granting in-state tuition benefits to illegals. Obviously, we know that the Community College Relief Act went into effect this past spring. So, obviously, you know, low-income residents are able to attend community college here in New Jersey. Yes, there have been some policies that people are on board with or not. You know, I'm about grading people, and I'm not going to give my grade yet, but if you had to grade Phil Murphy, the governor, Fred, what grade would you give him midway through his term?
I mean, it can't go much higher than a C.
Okay, why?
I give him a – well, I mean, you kind of said it. I mean, number one, let's talk about two different things. One is the policy, which is some of the things you spoke about, like the driver's license to people here illegally and legalizing marijuana. Let's put that aside, the policy, and just look at the straight politics. Murphy's a Democrat, and he has Democratic majorities in both houses. You would think a good politician should be able to twist arms and get done what he wants to get done. And obviously that did not happen with legalizing marijuana. And it also did not happen as an issue, I guess, that we haven't mentioned yet. He also wanted to raise taxes on millionaires. He wanted to raise the millionaires tax. And those two things just haven't been done. And I think that's kind of embarrassing. He was fighting. He, in June, in the run-up to this year's budget, I mean, he made a big deal that he wasn't going to compromise and these things are going to get done. And just Sweeney just refused to go along. And Sweeney kind of won. And also, I guess it's the same thing with the driver's license situation. So, I mean, I give him a C at best. Now, Chris Christie, you remember him, right, Chris Christie?
Sure.
I was joking, of course. But I saw him speaking over the summer. He went to a group up here in Sussex County. And he was, you know, Christie could be funny at times, a little flat-headed. He was making fun of the governor. And he touched on this point by saying, could you imagine what would have happened if I had a Republican majority in the state legislature? He said, if I had a Republican majority for 2 weeks, we'd turn the state upside down. And you understand his point, that obviously he'd make sure that the Republicans do what he wanted them to do. And I guess Murphy is unable to do that. So, I mean, that's the big problem. I mean, his views, again, you know, a lot of his views, I think part of it is philosophical. I don't think Steve Sweeney is as ideologically to the left as Phil Murphy is. But still, I mean, Murphy's unable to make the deals to make these things happen. I think that's obviously a failing. And I think that's why, given the – yeah.
You know, Fred, listen, I'm not trying to cut you off, but you're absolutely right about that. I think that you really hit on a good point there. I think that Chris Christie, say what you want about him, and I certainly have my reservations about Chris Christie. I mean, listen, the fact that he's a fellow Cowboys fan, yes, that's one of the things I always love about Chris Christie. We share that affinity for America's team. So, hey, that's one thing I can say, that I'm always going to think favorably of Chris Christie. But along policy lines, I think, you know, he was disappointing because, listen, yes, he has to work with the Democratic majority in the legislature. But the one thing about Chris, and I think you hit the nail on the head, he was a much better politician. He was able to sit in a room with State Senate President Sweeney at the time, you know, Assembly Speaker Vinny Prieto from up here in Hudson County, and try to get things done, try to do pension reform, try to, you know, put a cap on property taxes or property tax relief. In that regard, you're right. I think Chris Christie was an exceptionally better politician than Phil Murphy is. And another point you just made right now, which is absolutely on the money, you would think with majorities in both chambers of the legislature, not to say that the governor can just snap his fingers and get what he wants, but you would think it would not be as difficult as it's been for Phil Murphy. It's crazy to me. Like, for example, the Minimum Wage Act. I mean, listen, I have my concerns about raising the minimum wage drastically. It did, but Fred, but what was funny about it took almost a full calendar year where you would think that raising the minimum wage would be easier to do than legalizing marijuana because there's still sort of an ideological shift in the state that even though you're a Democrat, there are a lot of conservative Democrats down in South Jersey that say, hey, we're not really sure about legalizing marijuana. We may want to decriminalize it. We want to work on expungements, but outright legalization, even though, and I said this to all three state senators that I've interviewed up here where I live, State Senator Sack, State Senator Cunningham, and State Senator Sacco, yeah, they're Democrats, Fred, but they're not the most liberal type of Democrats when it comes to issues like that. So when you're seeing this disarray in the party, you would think like, hey, Phil Murphy kind of needs to get on the saddle and say, listen, I understand we're not all on the same page, but let's work on that. For the minimum wage, it took a full calendar year to get that done. And I'm thinking to myself, this is probably the least difficult thing to work on. And it seemed like it dragged on and on and on. And I think that's a reflection of how bad a politician Phil Murphy is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yep. And that's, and I don't know. I mean, the governor, you wonder if he's going to get better doing what he has to do. I don't know.
I think you're very generous. I would, with the C grade, I probably would, I'd give him a D, Fred. And the reason
A compromise on C-.
Okay, that's fair. Fine. I'll give him a C-. I just think that, I'm just disappointed because, listen, we knew going into the summer of 2017 when he obviously after the dust settled and we saw different Democrats when Steve Sweeney pulled out, when Stephen Fulop pulled out, that Phil Murphy, the candidate, was going to be the guy for the Democratic Party. We kind of knew he had the inside track to win because, let's be honest, I know Kim Giordano, she's a lovely lady. She's a very strong public servant. I love Kim. She's awesome. But Kim faced an enormous disadvantage, Fred, because I'm going to get on Christie about. I think Chris did not irreparable harm to the Republican brand, but he did a lot to harm Republicans in New Jersey. And I get it. His first term, he came in, fire away, he came in, defeating John Corzine, pulling off the upset, and sort of, being a Republican governor in a predominantly blue state. And yeah, he took on the teachers unions, he tackled pension reform, but then as 2013 came around and he started seeing those aspirations for president, all he became fixated on was sort of like winning re-election, getting Democrats on board. Obviously, I think we saw maybe that was a testament to what happened with Bridgegate and obviously that entire mess and his fixation on getting as many Democrats on board with him as possible. Yes, he beat Barbara Bono by this absurd margin, but he always had like the presidency on his mind. It seemed like in the second term, he wasn't really fixated on governing. And I think that at the end really hurt Kim Giordano, Fred. And I think that's why you saw not just only the low turnout, but you saw sort of like an overwhelming win by Murphy. And I just think that moving forward, he came in with this sort of momentum. And listen, one thing I've told people, you can't get mad at Phil Murphy for his policies because he didn't lie to you. In 2017, going into 2018, he's never lied to us, Fred. Everything he said he's trying to do.
Yep.
So I'm not mad at him for trying to go to the government.
That's one reason why I think he, despite his approval rating, he may get reelected. I think that, every poll indicates that legalizing marijuana is popular. Now, I don't know if that's true, but that's what the polls say. And, you know, even a millionaire's tax is popular, too, because that, in a way, that's only human nature, because let's face it, most people are not millionaires, so most people are not going to care if somebody else is being taxed. That's just human nature. So these things are popular, so I wouldn't be surprised if you could, if those issues could help him get the election again. But you're right, he did exact same what he was going to do, and he got elected now. I don't know what you make of that, but it's the truth.
No, listen, you're absolutely right about that, and I think that moving forward, again, a lot can happen between now and 2021. Listen, even recently, I think you might have heard reports that I think some journalists in New Jersey were asking President Sweeney, hey, how do you feel about primarying Phil Murphy? And if you remember, I think in 2017, he kind of laughed it off and said, no, I'm with the governor. I want to work with Phil Murphy. I want to work to get things done in New Jersey. And recently when he was asked about it early this spring, you know, he was sort of conspicuous by the silence he gave reporters, where he just sort of like gave a smile and just didn't answer the question. It kind of makes you wonder, like, is Steve Sweeney sort of fed up with Phil Murphy's sort of lack of being a good politician and saying, you know what, maybe Phil Murphy's vulnerable. Maybe I want to try to take out the governor in 2021 leading up to the primary. What do your sources tell you statewide in terms of whether or not that's something that Sweeney wants to explore?
Oh, I think he'll probably explore it, but the question is, I don't know. I don't know if he could win. I mean, his base is South Jersey, which is a strong base, but obviously not as many people in South Jersey as there are up here in North Jersey. And I think Murphy is still popular. Keep in mind, who votes in Democratic primary, basically? I'll answer my own. Answer my own questions. Basically, people who are a lot of public employees and people who are ideologically left-wing, just like conservatives tend to vote in Republican primaries. I think Murphy is probably very popular with that group, and I think that's why I think Sweeney might explode and realize that he won't have a chance of winning. Of course, Murphy obviously would have more money, too.
No, sure. Listen, absolutely. And I think that having said that, you know, should Murphy survive a primary challenge, if he gets one from Steve Sweeney, remains to be seen. But, you know, again, moving forward, it seems like if Republicans can't get out of their own way in New Jersey, and even despite the governor's low approval rate, I mean, I know it's under 50%. I might have misread it. I mean, maybe it might crack 40, but it's nowhere near 50%. And to be honest with you, Brad,
you're right. I mean, it's low, but I mean, it's like 40% at best.
Yeah, exactly.
But,
and again,
wasn't it like 40% approved, 41% disapproved, and the rest have no opinion?
And you know what, Fred? That's astonishing to me. Like, because, again, maybe it's because I'm just an opinionated person, and it's what I do for a living, so I'm never really short of an opinion on anything. But it just seems to me, whether it's just apathy or the idea that how can you not have an opinion about what Governor Murphy's doing? I mean, essentially,
here's the problem.
Here's
the problem, and like people like you and I mean, not that we're different, but people who do what we do for a living, we follow news all the time. But I think, unfortunately, a lot of people don't, or if they do, you know, you could watch cable TV, and you could watch, depending on your political preference, you could watch a wide variety of stations, but they're not going to tell you what's going on in New Jersey, and I think that's what part of the problem is. And unfortunately, newspapers are not as strong as they used to be. I was in newspapers for 30 years, so I think a lot of people just, you mentioned apathy. Yes, it's apathy. Maybe it's ignorance, too. A lot of people just don't follow things. I mean, if we were out right now, where are you based, by the way?
I'm based in Upstate Canada. I live in Union City.
Are you in Union City right now?
Correct, yes. Mm-hmm.
No, I'm joking. I'm like, we would go out in Union City and go to a diner and ask people who the governor is. If we ask 10 people who the governor is, I bet there'll be some people who would have no idea. Would you want to
probably
take that?
Yeah.
I'm, and that's the problem.
You know,
You know what? As much as I love gambling, especially with the NFL season and gambling on my phone, you know what? I might not take that bet, Fred, but that's a good one, though. I would not be surprised.
Yeah, I mean, that's good. I mean, that's just the way it is. Now, again, Christie told a story. It could have been apocryphal, but then it could have been true. At the same little gathering, it was a good gathering. She said he was going somewhere. He was at Newark Airport. And she said some guy tapped him on the shoulder. He described the guy as the guy in a business suit, so presumably he might have had a job that paid decent. He was trying to establish the fact he might have been an educated fellow. Tapped him on the shoulder and said, "I think you're doing a great job as governor. Keep it up." And Christie laughed and said, "You know, I'm not the governor anymore." He said the guy didn't even know that. He didn't know who the new governor was.
Wow.
Maybe he made it up. His tactics, you know, could have been apocryphal just to make the point. But I know I have seen things like this. I mean, sometimes in my reporting days, if you go around like election time and like go to a diner and just talk to average people, you'd be surprised at what they don't seem to know. That's just the way it is. But that's why maybe 20% of the people have no opinion on Phil Murphy.
You know what? That's fair to say. You know what, Fred? You know what, Fred? Thank you for illustrating that, because you know what? That makes a lot of sense. And you know what? Considering sometimes the apathy that exists in our political climate in New Jersey, that story should not surprise anybody. But Fred, before I let you go, I mean, you've been a gentleman. You've been on with me for just about an hour now, and I know you've had a long day. I know you want to get to writing and keep publishing those outstanding columns. Real quick here.
I'm just going to watch some Thursday Night Football, man.
Oh, God. Well, I look at the score because, it's not exactly blockbuster football on a Thursday between Jacksonville and Tennessee, but we'll see what the second half brings. But Fred, before I let you go, you're always a gentleman. I'm sorry. Go on.
I was going to say, I'm a Jets fan, so I know it's tough to talk about football these days.
Well, listen, my dad's a Jets fan. We're going to the Jets-Cowboy game week 6, so I'm very excited to take my dad. I know he's not too excited, especially, I mean, even though news surfaced this week that Sam Darnold could be back for that game, apparently his body's reacting better against the mononucleosis he's suffering from, so we'll see. But listen, it's very early in the season. We'll find out what happens with the local teams and certainly around the NFL. But Fred, before I let you go again, number one, you're a gentleman. I feel like I have you on for 2 more hours and still not get through everything. I mean, that's how good of a guest
you
are. No, you are. You're a great guest, and certainly you have such an encyclopedic knowledge of journalism and what's going on in New Jersey. And certainly, you know, I know my listeners are grateful tonight for listening to you and certainly your insight as to what's going on. Before I let you go, this is the part of the program where I give the floor to my guest, because I've been the one asking questions, Fred. Now, sir, I'll give you the floor. If you got a question for me or you want to pick my brain, sir, shoot away. The floor is yours.
Okay, let's talk about apathy. You teach at Rutgers University, right?
No, I teach full-time at Bergen Community College in Paramus.
Yeah,
my degrees are from Rutgers, yes.
How interested are the kids you teach in following politics? Do they know who the governor is? Do they know what's going on? Do they follow the news?
Well, ironically, listen, it's interesting because this past spring semester, I taught a class on state and local government. It's one of the poli-sci courses that is offered by the social science division at Bergen Community College. So I was happy to teach that course. And one of the things that I was really adamant about, Fred, was making sure that my students read every day, whether it was Inside RNJ or the Star Ledger, to make sure that they knew about New Jersey news and they knew about what was going on. Obviously, what's going on with the governor, the legislature. So I made it a point that part of required reading was not just only the textbook, but required reading also was predicated on reading news in New Jersey. So I made it a point to make sure that they stayed informed. That's number one. Number two, I think that from history courses that I teach, it seems to me, I think that today's modern students, I think, are very engaged. I think they're very interested, especially my history students. You know, they really enjoy learning about U.S. history.
again, I just came back from teaching a class this evening before I hosted the show tonight, and it's a class on American government that I teach, and you'd be amazed how students, I think, are really interested at the formation of our government. You know, again, as I mentioned earlier this week on Tuesday, we celebrated the 232nd birthday of the Constitution. So, you know, September 17th is Constitution Day across the United States, and I remind my students, I'm like, listen, whether it's the Bill of Rights or the expansion of the document since then, you know, it's still the most durable and I would argue the greatest legal document in mankind. And they look at me and I say, listen, I'm not trying to engage in hyperbole, guys, but it's the truth. It's the standard by which other democracies or other attempts at democracies have tried to emulate. Not always successfully, Fred, but they've tried. And certainly, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I think I'm always very uplifted seeing that my students, at least, because I make sure that they're interested in the material, but I can tell that they're interested in, again, not just only the origins of our government in our, you know, our country, but I think the way that politics works on a daily basis. Now, listen, one of the things I don't like to do, Fred, is I don't like to indoctrinate my students. I mean, I think we all know that in academia, it leans very heavy to the left. I don't do that. I don't like brainwashing my students. I know some of my colleagues do that. Hey, that's on them. You know, I personally don't like that. I don't think that's teaching, but I can't do anything about my colleagues. All I can control is how I teach the material. You know, and what I try to do is make history fun. I think I try to make politics fun and engaging because you know what? It is. It really is. If you sit down and you read about it, it can be engaging. It can be informative. It can be illuminating. So that's what I try to do on a daily basis, Fred.
Mm-hmm. That's good to hear.
Yeah, definitely. But Fred, once again, I want to thank you for your time. You're a gentleman. Keep up the great work. I love your columns. I call you a teammate and someone who I have an immense amount of respect for being part of the Insider NJ team. I think we all do our part to help make Insider NJ successful and why it has the great traffic that it does. You're a big part of it. Again, thank you for your time, Fred. I will I'll keep in touch with you. Maybe I'll see you at the League of Municipalities in Atlantic City. I'm not sure. Maybe
yes, that's coming up in 2 months. Yep, you see me. Yep, that'd be good.
Yep.
Thank you, for having me. It was a lot of fun.
Listen, we'll grab a beer or maybe we'll hit the blackjack tables when we're in Atlantic City for the league, okay?
Okay, that sounds like a plan. Thank you so much.
Okay. Have a good night, Fred. Thanks again.
You too. Take care.
Right, folks.
Bye.
Have a good one. Bye. All right, folks. 10:15 here on the East Coast. Great program tonight with Insider NJ columnist, fellow teammate, Fred Snowflax. Listen, if you haven't read his columns, you're doing yourself a disservice. Check him out, insidernj.com. You won't go wrong, believe me. There's a lot of information that Fred makes available. He's just a great writer. I look forward to seeing his columns when they come up on my news feed, and I hope that you do too. So, again, folks, if you miss any part of tonight's broadcast, you can always go to www.insidernj.com/podcast. You can listen to tonight's episode with my fellow colleague from Insider NJ, Fred Snowflack, as well as my other guests from throughout 2019. Certainly, it's great to be back after summer break. So we have some great guests coming up, certainly, so keep you informed of that. So, again, check it out, www.insidernj.com/podcast. You can do this from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. Again, folks, if you have a topic or any feedback about tonight's episode, write to me. I love to get emails in the inbox, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Once again, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram, ladies and gentlemen, at politicallydirectnj. Also, check me out personally on Instagram, at Professor Fernando Uribe. Also, hit me up on Twitter, at Professor Uribe. Also, like Politically Direct on Facebook, brand new likes each and every day. And don't forget, folks, that for the best political coverage and everything going on in New Jersey's political scene, no further than Insider NJ. Go to www.insidernj.com. This coverage again on a daily basis. You can move along and you'll see the subscribe button there. Enrolled in the intelligence briefing. And it'll go right to your inbox. So, again, when you're watching TV in the morning, maybe you're like me, you like to watch the sports debate shows on Fox Sports 1. You like to wake up and watch First Things First with Nick Wright and Chris Carter. Or maybe I'll flip back and forth to ESPN, see what's going on there.
maybe I'll check out the cable news shows in the morning. I love Fox and Friends. Maybe I'll watch Morning Joe occasionally. Maybe I'll watch New Day on CNN. I don't know. But as I'm flipping through the channels, I'm pretty much like, I'm sure like all of you, I'm going through my phone. I'm looking at my email, looking at my social media. And guess what? When I look at my email, every single morning, I see the morning intelligence briefing there. It's the best scoops, folks. It's the best journalism you'll find anywhere. And, of course, it's brought to you by Insider NJ. Again, don't forget to like them on Facebook and also follow them on Twitter. Never forget, folks, you can get your news night or day with Insider NJ. All right, ladies and gentlemen, again, I want to thank you for tuning in tonight. Great broadcast, great episode with, again, fellow Insider NJ teammate and columnist Fred Snowflack. Again, check out his columns on the website. And, folks, hey, listen, whether it's on your morning commute, getting your daily workout in, walking your dog, doing laundry for my students, doing homework, whatever, take a break and tune in. And trust me, you'll be happy that you did. And remember, live every Thursday night, you can listen to the best analysis and commentary about everything going on in New Jersey. And it's right here on Politically Direct on Blog Talk Radio. So, again, folks, never forget, it's real. It's here. It is Politically Direct. Good night. Hawthorne, New Jersey. All my good people listening in Hawthorne tonight, hey, appreciate the love and support here on the podcast. Appreciate you keep listening. Tell your friends, again, to do the same. Folks, please party responsibly. Have a good rest of your weekend. Enjoy the nice weather, again, that we get to enjoy here in New Jersey as the fall approaches, as the official start of autumn begins shortly. Again, appreciate it. Please party responsibly. Enjoy the NFL football this weekend. Hopefully, let's go Cowboys. Hopefully, moving on to 3-0 this Sunday with a win against Miami. Let's see, as hopefully we'll get a W and then move on to New Orleans next Sunday night on NBC. And for the locals, let's see if we can finally get a win this weekend. And maybe even the Eagles can get back above 500. We'll find out, folks. But again, enjoy the NFL. Enjoy the weekend. We'll see you next week here, folks, on Blog Talk Radio as the Executive Director of Garden State Equality. My good friend, Christian Fuscarino, joins us on the show. Hey, it's going to be very interesting. A lot to talk about in terms of the LGBT community in the Garden State and much, much more. You don't want to miss it next week with Garden State Equality Executive Director, Christian Fuscarino, joining me on Politically Direct. So again, folks, have a great weekend. See you next week here on Blog Talk Radio Live at 9 p.m. on Thursday nights here. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.
Get a good feeling, yeah.